Vinderfølelsen koster kun lidt småpenge. Som en velfortjent pause på Mac'en, der føles som dagens højdepunkt. Med Winning Deals fra McDonald's, kan du gøre hver dag til et win.
My Rock. My Rock. Danmarks eneste rockradio. Fang os på FM, DAB, RadioPlay.dk og nu også som podcast. Velkommen til My Rock Podcast.
Efter en kort sommerferiepause med både Comb Hell, Foo Fighters i det jyske og selvfølgelig megabrædet Def Leppard og Bon Jovi i Sønderborg, er My Rock Podcast endelig tilbage. Sidstnævnte koncert er netop det, som dagens podcast drejer sig om. My Rock havde nemlig den store fornøjelse at tale med guitarist Phil Collins fra Def Leppard, kort inden de skulle på scenen på Slagmarken den 11. juni. Det er første gang nogensinde, at der bliver afholdt koncert på Slagmarken, og omkring 25.000 mennesker var til stede på den sønderjyske muld, ikke langt fra hvor slaget ved Dybøl blev udkæmpet i 1864. En historisk begivenhed, som de to udsendte reporter godt kunne have læst lidt mere op på, da Phil Collins udspurgte os om, hvad der rent faktisk skete dengang. For that's another story, som Mike Tramp siger. Aftenen med Bon Jovi og Def Leppard skulle også vise sig at være en historisk en af slagsen, da Phil Collins nævner for os, at bandet har besluttet at fremføre deres klassiske Hysteria-album fra ende til anden. Da det er en af My Rock-redaktionens yndlingsalbums of all time, var vi selvfølgelig, ja, hysteriske. Kort inden showet talte vi med Phil om livet på tur, om at være mere rask i en alder af 61 end 30, og om at slå igennem i Amerika, inden de blev kendt i deres eget hjemland, og selvfølgelig om guitarer. Og så er der faktisk også et nyt album på vej. Mit navn er Stine Skovgaard. Tak fordi du lytter med.
Dance, Well, we're here backstage at the Def Leppard concert. And yeah, do you actually know where we are, Phil?
Söderborg.
Söderborg-ish. Yeah, you've ever heard of Söderborg?
No.
Great.
I may have, you know, and it's like just, we were just in Finland and I was trying to learn some of the words and we'd just been in Sweden and, you know, you get tucked down for thank you. And then you go somewhere else and it's completely different. And I've forgotten already. So, yeah, so even with towns, it's a similar thing.
Okay, this is actually an old battlefield.
I heard that, yeah, from 18-something.
Yeah, exactly. One of the most important battles of the Danish history took place. Well, not exactly here, but somewhere around here.
Really? So can you... I know we're doing an interview, but I know it's the Germans, right?
Yeah.
And so what happened? What was at stake?
It's it was called the Battle of Dybbøl, and well, the Germans tried to take over Denmark.
Wow!
So basically, what the Danes did, they stood their ground.
Right.
And there was an old what's it called? Mølle.
Yeah, a mill, windmill.
Windmill. Yeah. And it was actually made like an icon of Denmark, Dybbølmølle. It's iconic.
Really? Dybbølmølle?
Dybbølmølle, yeah.
Dybbølmølle.
So the Battle of Dybbøl, right around here.
Okay, cool. So I'm fascinated with I've literally in the last 5 years just really been getting into just history, especially, you know, European history and you know, wars and everything, and the fact that it repeats itself. So it's just fascinating to see, yeah. So.
Well, just to describe where we are. Right now we're in a trailer.
Yeah.
Behind the scene, I can see it's basically not your room because there's a bass.
Yes.
So we must be in Savage's.
So we're in Rick Savage's room, and this is the quiet room. And, you know, everyone does different things before we go on. So I usually work out. I'll be, like, kicking a bag or doing push-ups or something. Sav likes chilling out. So we have a quiet room for anyone who wants to go in there and just kind of clear their head.
So that explains the candle?
Absolutely, yes.
The, kind the of aroma candle.
And sometimes,
we
you know, we'll have like kind of frou-frou little, you know, curtains up and stuff. Yeah. So it's kind of...
What else do you have on your rider?
We have a juicer and it's different. You know, obviously touring Europe's very different to the States. And, you know, if we travel on a bus or something like that. So here it's kind of different every single night. So you have to kind of... So certain things, I'm a vegan. So, yeah. You know, me and Rick Allen are vegan. So we kind of... Yeah, everyone has a completely different kind of setup. So, but yeah, everyone's pretty comfortable.
Yeah. I actually wanted to know because one of the guys that I talked to quite a few times, Dave Mustaine.
Yes.
He mentioned to me at once, a day before I did an interview with you. Can you ask Phil when you talk to him, how about that Megadeth Def Leppard tour? And I asked you that time and you said, well, I'll get back to Dave.
Right.
I talked to Dave half a year ago,
yes.
And he said, he didn't get back to me. So what's the status?
It's you know, these things come up. It's like journey. We've been meant to tour with them for 12 years. We kept going, yeah, it's be great. And then it finally happened. So we just done that one. And next year, yeah, we're not sure yet. It's going to be an American tour for sure. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing some of the new album. So it's just fitting the whole thing is when both bands can, but that would be cool. So yeah, perhaps he could come out and do some of them shows with us. Would be great.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, then you could come back to Denmark.
I know.
Yeah, that'd
be
nice.
Do a Megadeth Def Leppard tour. Oh, that would be nice.
Now you mentioned a new album.
Yes.
Do you have any details?
Yeah, we started it. I mean, I just produced the Tesla album that just came out and we done most of it on tour, you know, in rooms like this. We'd go, okay, we got like 25 minutes today. We just, and other times it'd be 3 hours. And we actually done a whole album like that. And okay. It sounds amazing. And it was literally in backstage rooms, trailers, hotel rooms. And then we done the lead vocals and drums, obviously in a studio towards the end.
That was my next question, because the acoustic obviously here is not for doing drums or
absolutely.
Vocals.
See, guitars you can just plug into a Macintosh and just the way technology is these days, it's, you know, my stuff on stage has just shrunk. And instead of having the whole giant rack, I have a little fractal. It's this big. And usually I have powered speakers. We have different, a little bit of a different setup today. But for most part, everything shrunk so much in technology. And the same thing with like recording guitars. It's amazing.
I actually wanted to know because a lot of guitarists tend to like have the old analog setup.
Yeah.
How about you? Do you fit into the digital world?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my rig is totally digital, and we keep upgrading, updating it. And every time there's a little bump, my tech, John Zocco, he says, "Oh, we had an update today," and they're making it sound great. The people at Fractal are doing some ingenious work. So, you know, I'm for it sounding great. You know, I used a Marshall JMP, which is it was half valve, half for years. And then I just wanted something to replace it that would be digital and be exactly the same every night. So they finally, technology caught up. And so whoever sounds good, this is the best sound I've ever heard in my ears. So yeah, so I obviously went with that.
Do you rely more on the digital than the analog? Because basically, if you have a valve amp, it might fail at some point.
Yes.
But the digital, well, either it works or it don't.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so. I think especially if you're doing big tours on that, you can't be having stuff break down. It'd be awful. So yeah, no, it's a lot more efficient.
It doesn't take up that much space.
Absolutely. Honestly, it saved us a fortune on shipping cargo.
Yeah.
Last year, we had three identical A rig, B rig, C rig. So okay, different guitars and everything. And if you're playing the States and then you're playing Australia, Japan, the other slow boat and mm-hmm. the other stuff goes. And then we had some stuff go to England. And we have, three different kind of setups here for backline.
How many guitars do you bring?
I bring about... I've got like 8 or 10 this time. Usually about that, between 7 and 10. Yeah.
Do we have a favorite? Do you have that multi-tool, that go-to guitar?
I do. That keeps changing as well. You know, I've been with Jackson for over 30 years. I've owned signature model, and I got a new one last year. I have a new signature model DiMarzio pickup, and it's a single coil shape, but it's the most powerful single coil one they've got. So it's like a humbucker. So I've been using that, and it's just the clarity on it. So I'm using it. That's one of my favorites at the moment. And then I've got this other one that's a big, fat, chunky, kind of customized Jackson guitar. And that I'm using that as well tonight.
So a single coil that sounds like a humbucker?
Yeah.
That's a lot of power. That's funny. Well, the thing you mentioned, that you work out before the show. You and Dave Mustaine are doing karate at the same dojo in Los Angeles when at home. I know he brings the sensei on tour. Do you bring like a personal trainer or do you just do it by yourself?
We do have a personal trainer, and he's out with us right now. And I used to bring my sensei for 8 years. He was a Muay Thai world champion coach. So we would train every single day. So we would do that backstage or wherever. We'd find a carpet somewhere or a concrete floor, something every day. So it's the same thing. I keep kicks in and everything. I have a bag that we bring out with us. But we have a workout trainer that we do weights with as well at the moment. Mm-hmm. Worked out already every day again in the morning.
Is that a way to keep the mind straight?
It's a way to stay young. I mean, I actually feel better now at 61 than I did at 30. I mean, without a doubt. So that's definitely working. I see a lot of my friends I used to go to school with, and, you know, they're aching and it's like, oh. So, I just think you have to keep moving. And it's the same as with anything, really. It's keeping the mind sharp. You have to constantly be active mentally and the same physically, you know.
Can I ask what made you change your lifestyle? 30 years ago, was it seeing your other guitarists, other bandmates falling into alcoholism?
More the fact that I started blacking out and not remembering it. And it was like, you know, I'd wake up and it'd be a strange girl or driving a car. And I'd go, fuck, where have I been? You know, this is weird. So that's really what done it for me. I actually, had to stop. And then Steve, who was my best friend, he wasn't able to stop. It was too much for him. So yeah, I did, and he carried on and it ended up killing him.
Are you still thinking about him?
Oh, every day. Yeah. Just love Steve. He's great, But yeah, and it's just really sad, that whole thing, the fact that he couldn't stop and that was obviously gonna happen at some point,
All right. So you keep him in his your heart when
absolutely.
When you're on stage?
We actually decided to do Hysteria tonight, the whole album.
Tonight?
So, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We talked about it on our way here, and we were like, yeah, they're doing that at Download, so they're probably not going to do this.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's excellent.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Wow. We had such a bad ride down here. It was raining all the way. Yeah. And we had to stand out here in the mud. And now you're telling us you play Hysteria.
Yeah.
From one end to the other.
Yeah.
So.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
That's wow. I'm really, because I want to let you know this, that when I was like 10, 11, the first concert film I ever saw was in The Round in Your Face.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's massive. And since then, I was like, well, I haven't seen a concert film doing the same thing for me.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It was so cool because everyone was so in on it.
Yeah.
Everyone was laughing, having a good time. Is that a part of being in Def Leppard, having a good time while on stage?
It absolutely is. It's everything. And we've improved. We keep getting better. You know, the singing gets, but you're here, hopefully. Most of the time. The singing gets better with every tour. The playing gets better. And us as a band, you know, it's just, it's really comforting and confidence building to know that everyone is at the same level as far as that, you know, and we have the goal that you're just trying to make the band better. You know, I've done the G3 tour with Joe Satriani and John Petrucci last year, and that raised my guitar playing, you know, just being with them guys all the time. It's like, whoa, you know, just to keep up with those two was amazing. And they're so humble and so wonderful as people that that was easy. It was inspiring. So that, you know, also raised the bar for me as well, so.
Is that something, you learned something from them you can use in Def
Absolutely,
Leppard?
Yeah. I learned so much from them, you know. And they're just so great. And my tech, who's a great player as well, John Zucker, he'd be going, he used to tour with Dream Theater, so he'd ask all these guys, how'd you do that? And Joe Satriani, well, what's that then? He'd go, you do this. And yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Actually, one of my friends, he's a guitarist as well, plays with a lot of guys, Glenn Hughes. He was teaming up with Mike Tramp from White Lion, who's actually a host at our station. But anyways, and he was trying to do one of Vito Bratta's old guitar solos. And he said, I can't do it. I can't learn it. I can't do what he's doing. He's doing some weird shit and I can't do it. Is there anything, when you see those guys that you are on tour with, is there anything that you say, I won't be able to do that?
There is, but... like, you know, we were doing Highway Star by Deep Purple, and we'd done a three-part harmony. And so, you know, there's the on the record, we do the fast part as a three-part as well. And John Petrucci done one part, and he's just amazing. He'd go, oh, if I'm doing that, someone else has got to play this. And I can honestly say I'd never stretched so much. So that was my part, so I had to learn that. But when he showed me how to do it, I was like, oh, okay, this is great. And then Joe done another part. So yeah, constantly. And you know, it's great if you have someone to help you. Like YouTube's awesome. You can just like look on there and go, oh, okay. Yeah, Viv actually, when he went out with Last in Line, he said, I've forgotten what I played. So went on to YouTube and there was some kid playing his old song. And yeah, we do that, you know, for sure.
That's the worst part about YouTube. You can sit with your guitar and you can look through some things. And then there's this 12-year-old kid from Japan or whatever, and it goes like, flawless.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you do it? We'll be right back.
Do you think you rehearse more now than you did 30 years ago?
We play more now. We actually do more touring. So not so much rehearse, but I think, yeah, we usually get that down. And that's usually a confidence thing. And we're not one of those bands that just can get up there and play all the songs. They're quite involved. Like when we was rehearsing the Hysteria stuff, there's so many parts that you forget. You know, forget how to play and you got to play this while you're singing, which is really hard. So, yeah, we constantly have to revisit some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I was thinking about, because earlier in your career, it seemed like you were very focused on making it in the US. Later on, you took great pride in being British with the Union Jack, and now the bass. The listeners can't see the bass, but it's got a big Sheffield Wednesday emblem between the pickups. Was it hard for you going back from being like this band trying to make it in the US to come back to Britain?
But we've always been the British band.
Like, I know.
But we always had the Union Jack. It's always been there, you know. We've always been a British band. America adopted us, I think. So we were more popular there. So that's why we played there more.
How did the Brits feel about that?
They're a bit slow. I mean, they're a bit slow on it, you know. So, yeah, we play anywhere. I mean, I remember a few years ago we played Lithuania and Vilnius, and there was like 7,000 kids. They're all like 16 or 17 singing every word. And we were like, you know, look, we'd just play here all the time if we could, you know, if that's the reaction. So it doesn't really matter where it is. It's as long as you get that reaction. So, yes, that's what's important. And in America, you know, we it's our biggest market, you know, for whatever reason, you know, MTV coming out at the right time, us having albums that sounded somewhere in between Duran Duran and Metallica, somewhere in between there, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that was appealing. So I think that's really why, you know, that most of it happened in America, and the Brits were a bit slow to react to that, you know. Mm.
You say that America adopted you, but didn't you also adopt an American sound to break through in America?
No, to be a rock band. So the Rolling Stones, you know, we sing with American accents, and I've tried to figure this out, and it's because it's an American art form. You know, it's blues, and then it turned into pop and rock, or, you know, whatever it was. James Brown, just going back earlier than that, Aretha Franklin, Beach Boys, Stevie Wonder, you'd sing with an American accent. So even Mick Jagger would copy. He'd be like, dance, sister, dance. Normally I'd say dance. I'm going dancing. And so would Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
But when we sing it like an American. So we copy the American art form.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's us trying to appeal to an American. It's us trying to do an American art form. And by doing that, you end up sounding American. And like, for example, there's a lot of English actors who do great American accents, you know, in the thing. And it's like, because when I was a kid, we were constantly bombarded with American culture, pop culture. Mm. You know, it was TV shows, it was movies. And not so much the other way around. That's why a lot of American... It's changing now. Actors can't do British accents, but we grew up on all of that stuff, so it's kind of easy for us. And it's the same thing with the singing thing. We're actually doing an American art form.
Yeah,
but coming out of Sheffield, that part of England have launched so many bands from Birmingham, Black Sabbath, Newcastle has a whole scene of new wave of British heavy metal, and you were a part of that scene in the beginning. The evolution of Def Leppard from new wave of British heavy metal, sort of, to what it is now. How do you feel you evolved?
We had Mutt Lange, and Mutt Lange is the key to everything, I think. You know, he taught us how to play guitar, he taught us how to sing properly, how to write songs. The most humble, hardworking person I've ever met in my life. You know, you'll be sitting around like this, writing a song, and the next minute you'll wake up and it's like 5:30 in the morning. You're on the floor and it's like, what happened? Well, we were just working this song so intensely. So that's really what changed us, and we had him to get through. I'm from London, don't forget, as well. So it's a slightly different thing, you know, it was different bands and that. But Yeah, I get the British thing. It was, you know, it's a certain style. But again, you know, all these bands are very much influenced by American. It's like, you know, it's rock music come from blues, which, you know, totally from the fields in the Delta, you know, initially. Mm. So
basically what you're telling us that without Mutt Lange, no Def Leppard?
We wouldn't sound like this. I mean, he opened it up. He was amazing and totally inspiring, you know, to try this. And it wasn't, I know with a lot of, especially rock bands or any form of music, you know, that hip hop, a genre of hip hop or genre of that, a lot of people stay very much in their genre and rock people do a lot. But with Mutt, he just opened it up, broadened the horizons and made it way more interesting and exciting because you'd have other things coming in.
If Mutt Lange was such an important figure in Def Leppard, actually the secret member, why did you choose to go with another producer at a certain point?
Well, he was supposed to do Hysteria with us and was committed to do the Cars album. So he had to leave and we thought, we can't be sitting around for years and years, let's try this other thing. That didn't work out, obviously. So we pretty much wait for Mutt to come back in, and that's what Hysteria ended up sounding like, which was great, you know. But so that was it. And then just it takes a lot of time. For songs to be that level of excellence, it's really takes a lot of time. It'd probably be less now, but it's exhausting. You know, when you work like that, you know, it drains. It's a lot of energy, and certainly for him, it was just a lot of energy to drain every time he'd go in. He'd lose part of him, and anyone who works that hard, they lose part of themselves. In that, you know, so you can't really do anything else. You're kind of a slave to that.
Yeah. So when you did the Slang album, that was with another producer.
Yeah, but basically ourselves, because we wanted to do, we'd done three albums that were kind of, that sounded similar and we'd had the same approach. Even Mutt said, you know, this Adrenalize shouldn't really be like this. It should sound more like the first Guns N' Roses album than a Def Leppard album.
Yeah.
We got into the thing and it ended up sounding more like Hysteria than anything else. And that was a bit mistake, I think, you know, on our part. So we just wanted to do something different. I think when you do an album, the next album is, you want it to be so different because it gets boring if it's all the same all the time. So Slang was a different approach.
Yeah.
The songwriting, we didn't work so hard on the songs. We wrote the songs and then recorded them. The sound was a lot rawer, you know, it wasn't like very precise and that. It was just like playing live some of the backing tracks, you know, so it had a different vibe about it.
And do you feel you had to adapt to a 90s sound?
We had to change our sound because that was not cool anymore, you know, that just wasn't acceptable. So it just had to be a bit rawer. So I don't know about that, but we stuck around. A lot of other bands like folded or didn't, but we never split up, we never went away. No. So it was kind of a bit harder during the 90s for us. But I think the Slang album, it had to be a bit raw, otherwise it'd have sounded so out of place and like we didn't have a clue what was going on. So, and it would have ended up being like a lot of other bands who just faded away, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, you've been together in this band for a long, long time. And is there anything that keeps you together? Because a lot of bands break up after like three albums, 10 years, whatever. And then they like wear each other out. What do you do to keep fresh and to stay in the group?
We have the same goal. We have the same background, very working class backgrounds. Our parents went through World War II, which, you know, you guys obviously had the same experience. And, you know, our mums and dads were down the air raid shelters. And there was a different system, a value system. And I think we adopted that. Hello? Aha. Okay.
Sure.
They passed that on to us. It was very hard working, you know. They didn't see. It's like the Monty Python movie where the knight. I don't know if you've ever seen this. That thing is a knight, and he's fighting. He chops his arms and his legs off, and he's
come
like,
back, you coward.
That one, right? So that's who we are. You know, I mean, literally, Rick goes, "Yeah, well, that really happened to me." But we're like, you know, it is. It's a great. That's who we are. So we have that resolve. We have this British working class thing that got us this far. And now it's a joy. You know, we have kids and families and that, and they come out on tour. I've got my two kids with Camila, who's wandering around. She's here. And then I have a son who's in London at the moment. Otherwise, I'll see him. And it's great. It's just really great them coming out and on tour and stuff like that. So we've got that going on, but we're still the same band, and we still have the same kind of devotion to what we do, especially the band. And, you know, it took off way beyond what we ever thought it would. And it's and we owe it that respect. And so I think we have respect for Def Leppard. I know that's us, but it's also an entity. You know, it's like this spirit, I'll say, this entity that moves around, and we're part of it, and it kind of nourishes us, it inspires us and is wonderful to us, so we have to do the same back to it, if that makes sense. And I know a lot of bands don't do that. They don't see how fortunate they are. We are so fortunate. We're blessed. And, you know, we owe that to what got us here.
Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
You have to get ready to play Hysteria in its...
There you go.
Yeah, entirety.
Yeah.
We're going to be out there.
Great. Just got to remember all the chords. So,
but, yeah, we're going to play our guitar. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time. Great.
Pleasure.
som man kunne høre i slutningen af interviewet, så blev der banket på døren, og Phil Collins skulle videre. Inden hvert show varmer Phil og resten af bandet nemlig op med en hel times vokaløvelser for at lyde helt skarpe. Og derudover så er der også træning, der skal passes, specialmad, der skal spises og så videre og så videre. Lyder måske ikke særlig rock and roll, og man må også sige, at det er det komplet modsatte af, hvad Def Leppard lavede, inden de skulle på scenen i 80'erne. Men for at kunne være i stand til at spille og turnere i mere end 42 år, så er det nu engang det, der skal til. Og Def Leppard viser ingen tegn på at stoppe foreløbig. Heldigvis for det. Det her var My Rock Podcast for denne gang. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard. Tak fordi du lyttede med.
My Rock. My Rock. Podcast.